Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Everybody good?
Everybody's great.
Great Thursday morning here in New York City. Big show today. LeBron James still believes the Lakers can land another superstar. Kevin Durant reportedly has all intentions of signing with the New York Knicks. But we are going to start the program off in the NFL. Six-time Super Bowl champ Tom Brady entering the final year of his contract this season. Also turning 42 this year. A lot of signs pointing to the retirement conversation. And the Patriots are preparing themselves, reportedly not ruling it out after the season, despite Brady saying he wants to play till he's 45 years old. See, how hard is it for the Patriots to plan for the future when they don't know when Brady is actually retiring?
This is one of the most difficult things that NFL franchises have to do. So this is not only a Patriots issue. This has been an issue in the NFL for a long, long period of time. It's just that Tom Brady, now the question is posed to the Patriots, when will he quit and who will be the replacement? But if we looked at it, the teams over the last 30 years, there's only a couple teams that have done it successfully. And the success is marginalized because both of the great players, legendary players, were replaced by Hall of Fame players. But both those players were disgruntled and didn't like it. First of all, being Joe Montana. Joe didn't want to leave San Francisco, the collection of talent they had. He was forced out by Steve Young. Steve Young was the first guy really to be able to follow up a legendary player with a Hall of Fame career. Then we saw the Brett Favre saga. The reason why Brett going back and forth, he was being forced out with Aaron Rodgers being forced in. But not only in New England, we can look around the league. Our oldest quarterbacks that we have, all them being very successful throughout their career, there's a transition problem. You can go from the top to the bottom. You can go in New Orleans with Drew Brees. There is no succession plan there. Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. There is no succession plan there. Let's go to L.A. To Phillip Rivers. There is no succession plan there. We can go down the road to the Giants. There is no succession plan for Eli. So this is not just the Patriots' problem. This is probably one of the most hard things. If you find a franchise quarterback, how you replace them, those are probably one and two toughest things to do as an NFL franchise.
The only team on that list that seems to actually even be somewhat invested in a succession plan is the Saints, when they traded for Teddy Bridgewater and convinced him to stay, but they don't know when Drew Brees.
How long was Teddy Bridgewater's contract?
Exactly. Another season.
Okay,
And when they traded for him,
it
was an expiring deal. But they at least have someone in the building that they – but they're the only one. And to C's point, it's not like they have him locked up to multiple years. And I know Brady has said, I want to play till I'm 45. And we should take him at face value that he believes that right now. But Gronk just retired. Julian Edelman is entering year 11, and it's the final year of his contract. And Brady did just win his sixth Super Bowl. I think it was easy for him to come back motivated this year after they lost a Super Bowl when he had the ball down less than a touchdown, has the ball stripped away from him, does not want that to be his final great moment. But now he's got six. Nobody else at the quarterback position has more than four. If they win again, if he gets his seventh Super Bowl, like even a guy as self-motivated as Brady, what type of ghosts is he going to have to create? What types of doubters is he going to have to create out of whole cloth to convince himself, I have more left to do here? So I understand why the Patriots would be concerned that any year could be Brady's last year, and it's a real concern. It's one of the reasons why that Josh Rosen, the conversation is there, because it seems to make so much sense with his age, with his salary, and with Brady being on a year-to-year basis.
So let's talk about what the Patriots could possibly do or be thinking about doing. Is Josh Rosen the best fit for someone who can come in, sit behind Brady for maybe a year? Is it someone in the draft? Is there someone out there that you could say maybe that is like a Jimmy Garoppolo? Hey, this guy could sit for a year or two and then be a good successor to Tom Brady?
Right. I don't have any personal information on this, but I know that the Patriots, last year they looked at a quarterback. I know they like Baker Mayfield. And part of New England's interest, it made Baker ascend on the draft boards, because when the word got out that New England had information on Baker and they were intrigued about him playing, other teams started doing that. So I think there is a quarterback in the draft that New England likes if they can get him at the right spot. I don't believe that's in the first round. And I believe that they're looking at the option of Josh Rosen because of the way they do business. And I'm certain they had a good grade on him when he was coming out. But New England, a lot of times it's the price. If they can get a guy at the right price.
Even at the quarterback position.
Tom Brady's the greatest example of that. I mean, he has set the precedent that we'll never be able to see. Russell's not giving no hometown discount in Seattle. Dak told him, I'm not giving no hometown discount. So when
Drew
you
Brees
have that,
never has.
And when we see how they go about their roster, what they've done this offseason, you want a new contract? We ain't got time for you. We'll let you out the door. I believe that Belichick, as long as he's in the NFL, that's the way he's going to run his salary cap, that it's always going to be marginalized by, I'm not going to pay premium dollars regardless of what position it is.
I want to go back to the Favre-Rodgers story because I think the Patriots were on the road to a similar story in that the Packers took Aaron Rodgers not because they that year needed a quarterback, but they thought the value was too good and that Favre was nearing the end. They didn't know Favre was going to play after they drafted Aaron Rodgers another five full seasons in this league. So they draft Aaron Rodgers thinking he'll sit for a year or two, and then they end up replacing, after 3 years, replacing Favre with Rodgers. The Patriots, I think, drafted Jimmy Garoppolo believing he will sit for a year or two and then he will replace Tom Brady. But Tom Brady kept getting better. The team kept winning. He not only did he not tail off, he reached new heights. He won an MVP. And so all of a sudden, Garoppolo's rookie contract was up and they were out of time. I think the Patriots tried to have the very rare but clean handoff from one franchise quarterback who we've groomed to another, but Brady outlasted him. And that's, they could reset that clock with Rosen. I believe that if the Cardinals decide they're going to take Kyler at 30 at number one, the Patriots would offer 32 for Rosen. Now, will someone come in and offer more than that? Will someone trump that? I don't know. But I think the Patriots recognize those timelines fit, even if Tom wants to play more than this coming season.
And maybe that's why these teams that you mentioned don't have succession plans, because all these quarterbacks are sort of outplaying and out sort of outliving what their normal time span would be for a quarterback these days.
Yeah, right, I've seen plenty of motivation too for Tom to come back. I don't feel like Nick. If I get to seven, if I get to eight, I got twice as many as anyone else. So I believe that Tom Brady understands what he can do. It's not just the stuff on the field. The ability to be able to come to your job and dominate. Why would I change profession? I'm doing something with Peyton Manning this weekend. We're filming something for the NFL for their 100th season. And Peyton Manning is still looking for something. If he could still be playing, he would be playing. I don't know why we would think that these guys would give up, which I believe are the greatest jobs ever, being a quarterback of an NFL franchise.
And that's why Brady says he wants to play till he's 45. He feels the same way. Coming up, LeBron James speaking out about the offseason. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this.
Hey, guys, it's Nick Wright. A quick word from our friends over at Indochino. Did you know that made-to-measure suits fit better compared to generic off-the-rack suits? Many say that a man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is exactly what you need. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, not to mention the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. So here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom of your choice located across the U.S. and have them take your measurements personally. Or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices and then kick back and relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in just a couple weeks. This week, our listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering the code FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. Again, that's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deals for a premium made-to-measure suit. Once you go custom, you don't go back.
Welcome back to the show. We'll talk LeBron James in just a second, but first, a couple of big plays. Last night, Jeremy Lamb dropped Stanley Johnson, misses the shot. Malik Monk there, though, to clean it up.
Malik Monk helped his guy out here, made this a highlight, because if this is just a regular miss, we don't get to see you breaking the ankles there. And no foot stepped on there. See, I know that's what you're looking for.
Well, you got to watch for it first. Yep. You got to be able to know that. An NBA athlete being shook to the ground like this. What had
Pacers,
happened?
Pacers, Pistons, Reggie Jackson drops Miles Turner and then hits the step
back. Okay, let me check it out. Oh yeah. He got some 18s. He stepped on them.
You think he stepped on his foot there?
He definitely stepped on his foot.
Oh, I thought he was a good 6-8 inches away. We'll watch it again. Well, I think you can see the hardwood.
Okay,
watch it from this angle.
Okay.
I don't think so, see. Yeah.
His left foot stepped on him, Nick.
We'll address this.
I'm willing to bet you $100.
Oh, boy. Here
okay.
We go.
Let's do it. No problem. Let's go, Dusty. We were watching it already.
That's great. Nuggets and Spurs.
Yeah, you got it.
Malik
25
Beasley
for you, Dusty.
Driving down the lane puts Drew Eubanks on a poster.
Let's bet he finished this one. Oh.
All right, double or nothing. I take that side of it. Drew Eubanks, go get it, young fella.
Good finish.
Oh, Malik Beasley did that. My bad. Drew Eubanks got dunked on.
You owe me another 100.
No, I don't.
Moving on to LeBron James now.
I don't even know you the first 100 yet. We got to see that video again.
It has been a season to forget for the King. He suffered the first major injury of his career, and he'll miss the playoffs for the first time since 2005. So all eyes now shift to the offseason, where LeBron and the Lakers will hope to recruit another superstar. James knows how important this summer is. He told Bleacher Report, "It is very critical to me and my future, and I'm positive and very optimistic that Magic and Rob and the franchise will be great. They got me. I'm very confident, and I'm confident that players want to play with me. I'm very confident in that." Nick, you believe LeBron can still get a top-tier free agent to join him?
Yes. I mean, we did just see Anthony Davis blow up his whole season and take a legacy hit in an effort to get to LeBron James, right? That happened. We all saw it. It was a big, major story.
Right. But the issue is, the question is free agent. Anthony Davis is not a free agent.
No, I understand
so
that.
So I could understand trying to appropriate him talking to one of the stars. So that's one question, Anthony Davis. Will he be traded there? The other one is, what if he gets traded to Boston or to New York? Then will we get another free agent?
We haven't heard of free agents.
No. Of course. The reason I brought up Anthony Davis, because obviously Anthony Davis can't pick his destination, because Anthony Davis will not be a free agent for another 15 months from now. The point I'm making is, why would LeBron, when the Lakers have a max cap spot, not get someone to come play with him? It would only be if these rumors that have become louder and louder as the season went on are true. People don't actually want to play with LeBron. Kevin Durant said he's toxic. Rick Bucher, who I know we're going to talk about later, some comments he had from Kevin Durant said, guys think he sucks too much oxygen out of the room. Okay, so, but I just saw the only superstar during the season who tried to change teams tried to go to LeBron's team. So LeBron obviously believes he can get somebody, or else he wouldn't have gone to the Lakers. LeBron, the Lakers was not just about basketball, but basketball wasn't a third or fourth concern. And he knows he will not make another NBA Finals, let alone win another championship, if he doesn't get a Robin to his Batman. So he's confident that somebody is going to come play with him. I'm confident as well.
But do you think what happened this year in L.A. changed the minds of some of the potential free agents? Do you think if the injury never happened, they were in fourth place and cruising, it would be a completely different story than where circumstances are right now?
I mean, this is the thing about L.A. and what happened this year. It will always have an effect because they don't even have a coach. So if you're a potential free agent, like, who's going to be the coach? What kind of system am I going to be running? Like, they haven't even had a chance to think about those things. So the lack of continuity, it does hurt them to be able to get a free agent. And, of course, LeBron would think that he could get a free agent, but he don't know for certain. Because let's just look at who's available.
Mm-hmm.
I went and watched Kawhi play last night in Toronto. Now, I don't have any information. I don't think anything's changed about Kawhi and his opinion. But I know that Kawhi and Doc Leonard and Doc Rivers and Jerry West, I know that's appealing to Kawhi and his camp. So when we start looking at, I know KD's not going there.
If Kawhi ends up going to L.A. and go to the Clippers, who are the top-tier free agents?
The next two are Kyrie and Kemba.
Okay.
And we
all right, so now we're starting to get down, too, because we believe that Kyrie and LeBron works. We don't know if him and Kemba work, especially from a defensive standpoint. And now you're starting to get, are they good enough to be able to win? So now you're starting to get your second, your third, your fourth, and your fifth choice.
So there are clear tiers of this, and we can illustrate it in picture form. Like, and I think you would agree with these tiers. See, first tier, KD, who's not going, Kawhi Leonard, who you just laid out the big obstacle they have, and Kyrie, who we've discussed. You could argue Klay should be in the first tier, but Klay's almost assuredly staying in Golden State. We agree that tier two is Kemba and Jimmy Butler, right? And then you're in the real question marks. Boogie or Tobias Harris, tier four Vucevic or Chris Middleton.
Question marks being, are the tiers three and four
good
big enough free agents pairing with right. LeBron to be successful in L.A.?
I do not think if it ends up being LeBron plus Boogie, I don't think that's enough. I think that's a bigger defensive problem than LeBron plus Kemba, because I think you need – if you can win if LeBron and Kemba are out there, if you have a good defensive big man. If Boogie's your defensive big man, you're, I think, drawing dead. But I think anyone in those first two tiers – plus LeBron James is enough. Anthony Davis, who's not a free agent, would be in tier one, obviously, but that's a separate discussion. I have no reason to believe that things have gotten drastically worse for the Lakers to get somebody this offseason, and they clearly always believed they would. Chris Broussard made the case that this season going so bad for some free agents would make it more appealing because they would get more credit, because it wouldn't be I rode LeBron's coattails. It was they missed the playoffs and then I got here and it was supercharged. So I think there are things in the works right now, and there is a level of confidence from people that I don't think would be espousing false confidence. Like, the bill's going to be due on this come the beginning of July. We are going to know the answer come the beginning of July, be it Anthony Davis or one of the free agents.
Yeah, I just think we're going to run out of people. It's not like it won't be, oh, man, guys don't want to play with LeBron. It's just that guys have better options. If I'm Kyrie, do I go to New York? I'm from the East Coast, play with KD, or go to L.A. and ride LeBron's coattail again. So New York, to me, for Kyrie, is a better option. Kawhi, based on his personality, I wouldn't be surprised at all. It's nothing with LeBron, but he really likes Doc Rivers, and they like Jerry West. He likes the way they're going to be able to travel, not have to be under the microscope and everything. So you start running out of positions, and I don't believe Kemba and LeBron are good enough to win an NBA title.
But I think what you said earlier is interesting. It's not just which free agent can you get to be there. There's no head coach in place. All the playmakers they got, they're going to want to replace with actual shooters to help LeBron. I mean, you're almost starting from a year back putting a team together again. How appealing is that for a free agent?
So like I said last week, it's like this year never happened, except LeBron's a year older and he suffered an injury. This is a worst-case scenario season. I thought Chris brought up a really good point. The only, if you want to find a silver lining, it's you got off Luke Walton as early as possible and you go get a real NBA head coach. I am not sitting here saying that you know if they get Kemba Walker, they go win, or even Kyrie Irving, that they go win a title. There are other elements of team building. There's other elements of coaching that you are absolutely right have to be filled in. But I believe they're going to get another legitimate all-star to pair alongside LeBron James. And I think we disagree on how good Kemba would be. I think Kemba is the exact fit Kyrie was. I don't think Kemba's a worse defender than Kyrie is. I think Kemba is, in fact, I know he's a better three-point shooter than Kyrie is. He is not as good with the ball handling and the finishing at the rim because nobody in league history is as good as Kyrie in that spot. And we haven't seen Kemba in the big moments the way we've seen Kyrie.
We can't appropriate big game moments to think that he's on the level of Kyrie.
No, I totally agree with that. And he's not as good of a player as Kyrie overall, but stylistically, I think LeBron plus that guard position.
I'm
going
to tell you how bad it's gotten, that we're starting to make a case that, oh, him and Kemba can work. Okay, when we look at the class of free agents, we talk about the Anthony Davis trade, if AD goes somewhere else. Oh, wow, him and Kemba will work. That was not part of the equation. When he moved from Cleveland to L.A., to think he would be paired with Kemba and they get ready to win his fourth title, that wouldn't be in LeBron James's plans and are the people that manage. So that would be a surprise to him.
Well, to me, there's only three realistic names: Kawhi, Kyrie, and Kemba. Klay, we know, I think we know, is staying in Golden State. Kevin Durant, I feel like we know definitively is not going to the Lakers. And I don't think Jimmy Butler, to me, Kimba's a better fit than Jimmy Butler. And I would be very surprised if, as far as personalities go, if there's a Jimmy Butler and LeBron fit. I think Jimmy Butler's the least likely of all of the guys that are true all-star difference makers. I think it's Kawhi, Kyrie, and Kemba, with that being the order of, you know, the wish list, Kawhi being at the top.
All right, you mentioned KD. We'll hit that next. Is Kevin Durant a lock to leave Golden State? We'll break it down. This is First Things First. Tonight, the countdown to the Cup continues on FS1. Alex Morgan and Megan Rapinoe lead the U.S. women's national team against fellow World Cup contender Australia. Catch all the action tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports
app. Aussie's going down tonight.
Okay. All right.
Patriotic.
It was a lot.
I'm letting you know.
Very close to me. It was a lot.
Sorry.
All right, we're going to go viral now. Tom Brady tweeted out what his trading card would have looked like if he pursued baseball, which motivated us to dig into the Throwback Thursday archive to find this 2003 footage of him with the Red Sox.
Can you hit one out of here?
I think I can. It could never get me out of the batting cage. I was one of those guys. One more. One more. With the thought of taking probably about 30 or 40 in there now. I think I'd go pull one around that pole.
Oh, he got it.
I'm done.
He got it.
I did pull it out of one of the shorter parts. To get it out on the last swing, I kind of walked away with a real good taste in my mouth.
Here's the bat.
Did you know he was drafted to baseball before he was drafted to the NFL?
I had heard that, yes.
Montreal Expos, 18th, 19th round, something like that. I hadn't heard that. I learned that this morning. I knew Brady played baseball. I didn't know he was drafted while he was, I guess, after his junior year.
That was one reason why he didn't have a good season at Michigan. Senior year was baseball. That number one draft pick that Michigan put in front of him had him subbing with him. Yeah, with the Yankees. They had made a little promise
Drew
to
Henson,
him.
Drew Henson, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I knew he played baseball. I didn't know he had been drafted.
Totally unrelated note. You know who else was drafted to play baseball and actually did play baseball?
I can't
who
wait.
Played third base for the Blue Jays?
Who?
Number 44, Boston Celtics, Danny Ainge. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Random professional athletes who played baseball back
no
in
problem.
The day.
The people just went to the fridge. They'll come back. We'll say something to bring them back.
Right. I thought we had an intervention.
I know,
this.
But just people that were drafted by Canadian baseball teams. I mean, how often can I bring that up?
You just pulled the Canadian thing out right at the last minute.
Those were all facts compared to some of that other LeBron stuff we had going on.
Stories to start your morning. We're bringing you back from the fridge. Here we go. While the Cardinals are considering drafting Kyler Murray first overall, doesn't mean they're moving on from Josh Rosen right away. Arizona has reportedly not set a deadline to deal Rosen and might keep both quarterbacks on the roster for a while. Nick, what do you make of this?
I like that we're already assigning them both quarterbacks. Like, Kyler Murray is evidently already an Arizona Cardinal. And so now we're talking about both quarterbacks. If they draft Kyler, which all signs are pointing that they will, assuredly they would want to trade Rosen before the draft or on draft day so they can then use that pick this year to help Kyler. If you wait till after the draft, now we're talking about a 2020 pick. You don't know what spot in the draft any of those picks would be because you don't know what the team's record would be. I don't really buy this. I think if they draft Kyler, Rosen will be traded in short order.
I believe that the Cardinals are making a huge mistake the whole time. Because if I was Cliff Kingsbury, when I got hired, I would be like, Josh Rosen's going to be a star. I'm getting ready to make him into a star. I let everyone else talk about the draft, Kyler, all that. I would have people making think, I'm getting ready to make this kid into a star. Even though behind the scenes, if I was like, I'm going to ship him out. But I just believe they're going about it the wrong way. Both of these quarterbacks cannot be on the roster together.
All right, moving on. It was a great comeback season for Andrew Luck and the Colts. Indy went 10-6 and lost in the divisional round to the Chiefs. Owner Jim Irsay has his sights set not just on one, but three Super Bowls in a row.
Oh, in a row.
Oh, also wants to win the Powerball and a couple of New York City marathons. Three Super Bowls in a row. See, just how good can this Colts team be next year?
Listen, Jim, stop talking, man. All right? I mean, you got some things in the past people are going to start bringing into question if you keep making comments like this. I believe the Colts are one of the best teams in the AFC. To me, right now, on paper, them in Kansas City. Let's see how the draft goes. Let's see how the back end of free agency goes. But, yes, they should be competing for Super Bowls with what we saw last year. Frank Wright, in his first year there as a head coach, being in sync with that general manager, yes, things are looking up for the Colts.
Absolutely looking up. But see, how many Super Bowls they win with Peyton Manning?
One.
They won one. Okay, how about you get to one Super Bowl with Andrew
Luck? But
that's
part of the promise that he said with Andrew Luck, that he would win twice as many as Peyton Manning. He had said that before.
Absolutely. But now he's talking about winning three times as many and doing it all in a row, which has obviously never been done in NFL history. Let's just calm down a little bit. Let's get back to
an AFC championship game. And this is something that I do know.
Uh-huh.
Man, drugs aren't good.
No, correct.
Okay.
Agreed.
To hoops now, quickly.
Oh,
John Morant has declared for the NBA draft after an incredible sophomore season at Murray State. It's no big surprise. Ja, believed by many to be the best prospect not named Zion. See, how well will Morant's game translate to the NBA?
Well, he has an NBA game. I mean, he can go off the bounce. He has unusual lift once he gets to the rim. As far as a guy his size who can finish with the power and the force and the creativity, he's got a jump shot he's got to work on, but it's more than good enough at this point in his game. Electric quickness with the dribble, man, his first step. Man, no, he's got an NBA game. This is about going to the right place, though.
Yep.
He can't be a star. He don't have the kind of game he can be a star anywhere, like Allen Iverson. He needs some help, but, man, he's definitely got an NBA game.
And he's got the one thing that I'll add, he has spectacular court vision. He is all these highlights are his leaping ability because they're more fun to watch, but his passes are elite level already. He is, to me, as surefire of a number two pick as Zion is at number one. We know what the draft will be. Zion 1, Ja 2. It's 3 through 8. That is, right now, you have no clue who's going to be after him. But he's definitely the second best player in the draft.
All right, let's stay with college basketball here. After Duke was eliminated by Michigan State in the Elite Eight, reports surfaced that Coach K is considering altering his recruiting philosophy, focusing less on one-and-done players like Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett. Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo was on our show yesterday and discussed his recruiting philosophy.
Sometimes you got to find some superstars, but I think you got to mix it in. You know, you got to have some players that are good enough to be great, but yet not quite great enough to be gone immediately. And if you got the balance of that, it's good. I don't think you're going to win just with a bunch of really good players. You got to have some stars. That's the nature of the beast, but if you got a good culture, they all work together, and you got to have some balance.
It's an interesting philosophy, and when he says it like that, it's a logical philosophy. Do you think Coach K should adopt a little bit more of that moving forward?
I thought Coach Izzo put it perfectly. Good enough to be great, but not great enough to be gone immediately. And it's really hard because if you have the number one recruit in the nation that says, I want to come to your school, you say, okay, great. And then it's happened with Duke. Then the number two recruit said, I want to come to your school. And the number three recruit said, I want to come to your school. Nobody's in the business of turning those guys down. But what we have seen is you do need elite level talent, but you also need some juniors, maybe even a senior that has been through the fire. And things as simple as their body is developed from a 19-year-old to a 22-year-old. Their basketball IQ is developed from a high school player who could just physically overpower people to someone who has to deal with different collegiate defenses, collegiate zones, collegiate traps. So I think Coach Izzo has it exactly right for his school. I think it's very tough for Kentucky, for Duke, for Kansas, the three schools that in the one-and-done era have gotten the lion's share of those guys, to ever turn one of these players down. And when you have all those guys coming in, see, it's tough to get the four-star to come there because, well, wait, am I going to get recruited over each year? I'm not going to start as a freshman. And then the next year when I'm a sophomore, you're going to have freshmen come in and start over me. So until the one-and-done rule changes, I think it's going to be difficult for Coach K or Coach Cal to drastically change their philosophy because you don't turn down talent and you can't keep talent there when they're going to be a top 10 NBA draft pick.
This is very simple. College basketball is at the mercy of the kids. Once they do change the one and done rule, parents and handlers
people closest to the kid will think that more kids can go from high school. Because we have people on programs thinking like this who voice their opinion that, oh, you should just skip the process. And it's a very, very difficult process. We've only seen a handful be successful at it. So I just believe whatever the kids want. If the kid says, hey, coach, I don't know, I'm going to take him. I'm not going to turn down that scholarship. So the rich get richer because they'll always get the better kids. But if I'm a four-star kid, should I be going to those schools anyway? Because you're going to get recruited over if they had one and done or not.
Is there a correlation, Nick, between one and dones and success in the NCAA tournament? Of the last couple of years, how many NCAA champions have been one and done?
There have been since we got rid of where you could go high school to pro. Since the one-and-done rule came into place, there have been two notable champions, the Anthony Davis Kentucky team and the 2015 Duke team. 2015 Duke team that had Tyus Jones, Justice Winslow, and Jahlil Okafor.
Out of how many years?
We're talking about a dozen years now. And so you've had, or at least 10-plus years, you've had two. Now, we've had a bunch of teams come close. Kentucky went undefeated with one-and-done kids until the Final Four. That was a great Kentucky team. And we shouldn't overreact to the fact that if the Goins kid had missed that shot, Duke would be the overwhelming favorite going into this Final Four. It's not that you can't win. It's that you are not going to have the edge come the tournament that you seem to have during the regular season. You're not going to have the edge come the tournament that the talent or that the draft profile of the players on your team would dictate that you should have.
The field has a huge advantage on the one and dones. It's, do you want to play basketball with kids or do you want to play against grown men? If you watch the Final Four, you'll look at the lack of freshmen that are on this team. It's not unique to this year. Yeah, you might be able to put together a collection of players, but you're at a huge deficit if a guy, Kenny Goins, been there. I've been going to training table. I've been lifting weights with the strength coach 4 or 5 years over this high school kid. There's a huge advantage, not only from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint and human experience. I got 4.5 years, 5 years of human experience on the earth, more so than those kids. So you have to do it for the kids. If you're a big school, Kentucky, Duke, you got to go with the one and dones. You got to let them come there. You can't deny them. That's why Duke changed to be able to match what Kentucky was doing. But you're at the mercy of the kids. If a kid wants to come and develop, you're okay. Come and I'll try to develop you. But when he wants to leave, he's going to leave.
And when you say human experience, it's also, what did Coach Izzo talk about when you asked him about when he turns the page to, instead of looking back on the game they won, to the Final Four? Said, man, I learned early on, ticket requests, hotel requests. The players aren't dealing with all of that, but they are dealing with the pressure of the NCAA tournament. As opposed to Coach Izzo's guys, even though this is their first Final Four for this class, they've been in this tournament before. They have dealt with the pressure of going on site, knowing our season's over if we lose. The freshmen have never dealt with any of that.
That's a great point. All right, let's get back to the NBA now. In 2016, Kevin Durant left OKC for greener pastures in Golden State, and it changed the balance of power in the NBA drastically. Well, Durant has another decision to make after this season, and it will most likely have the same impact. Right now, all signs pointing to KD heading to the New York Knicks. NBA insider Rick Bucher was on Undisputed and reiterated just as much.
From everything, and this is not from KD, it's not from KD's business manager, everybody else that I've talked to has basically said it's a done deal. Now, there's always, when you make a championship run, yep, and you're holding that trophy and you're with your boys in the locker room, there's always that possibility. But from everything that I've heard, the pieces are already in place. This feels very much, in a lot of ways, like the last dance with the Chicago Bulls. Okay.
This was the rumor that's been swirling for the last couple of weeks now. Nick, let me start with you. Are you buying that Kevin Durant is actually coming here out east to the
Knicks? It's the rumor that's been swirling for the last year. I mean, this was the thought that it could happen a year ago after they won their second championship and then things got better and the Knicks were not in the position that they are in now. The Knicks know this. That's why the Knicks traded Kristaps. The Kristaps Porzingis trade makes no sense on its face.
Unless
it's like, well, we're trading him kind of for Kevin Durant and another guy. Mm-hmm. We're giving you Chris Epps. You're going to take our bad contracts. Why? Cap space is useless unless it is attached to a human being, as our Lakers discussion throughout the day has talked about. Like, there's an element of, okay, you have cap space. How can you use it? This is all the NBA insiders aren't making this up. We didn't all get on a phone call and say, hey, you know what? Let's just talk about KD to the Knicks for a year and try to speak it into existence. We're sick of the Warriors. Let's try to. No. Draymond heard it. I heard it. Broussard heard it. Rick Bucher heard it. Mannix, everybody has heard it. And Kevin Durant is a mogul who is more than a basketball player. And the mogul side of his world is setting up shop a few blocks from here, where we are right now. So everyone who has said it has couched it the way Rick Bucher has, which is, now, I guess, suppose maybe something could change because human beings change their mind, because something happens, because all of a sudden you have a moment, Dwight Howard changed his mind about leaving Orlando. This is a true story because of the candy they had on the team plane. He was like, you know what? They really do love me here. I'm going to stay. And then 2 weeks later, he's like, why'd I do that?
Next time we talk about him, it'll be too soon.
Okay, but go ahead. Fair enough. But the point is, people change their minds.
Sure.
But if the decision were today, if the season ended today, then if free agency opened tomorrow, then tomorrow Kevin Durant would be a New York Knick. That is where everything has been building.
Well, if you look around the league, you have to look at, okay, where could Kevin Durant go that would build what he wants to build as far as an empire? And who has relationships with Kevin Durant? New York would be one of the destinations regardless who was there, regardless they were stable as a franchise or not. But the reason why I believe he's going to come is because of one guy, and that's Scott Perry. Scott Perry is the general manager of the New York Knicks. He happens to also be a friend of mine. He happened to be on the staff in the organization that drafted Kevin Durant in Seattle. So if Scott Perry was in Orlando and I thought he could build his Durant's empire there, I would be saying he's going to Orlando because that's where Scott came from. If Scott was in Memphis, I'd be like, man, KD ain't going to join him in Memphis. So it's not only his business partner. It's not only what the rumors are. It's what's in place in New York. And if you read the tea leaves, they just traded their star, their franchise player. Why? Man, they must have someone else coming. And last year, as far as KD, I don't believe that he was done in with the Warriors. And also, the free agent market was not the same as it's going to be this summer. So that's my reasoning. I don't know what the other people, why they're doing it, why they're saying it and everything. But I'm just going to tell you, my reasoning is who's in New York and who is the number one target of Scott Perry in free agency 2019.
When we talk about why Kevin Durant may not be happy in Golden State, Bucher went on to say KD wants to be appreciated more. He doesn't feel appreciated. He doesn't feel like the Warriors faithful ever really embraced him. Do you think any of this talk could derail the Warriors this season? Is there something out there, any of this talk derailing this season? And do you believe the reports that he hasn't been appreciated more in Golden State?
Okay, well, so two separate things. First of all, if it was going to derail it would have already happened with the Draymond thing. They got through it. It's not ever going to get worse than that moment on the bench.
I don't know that, because if you get into a tough series and just how you talk to people, because I haven't forgotten, all right? And if KD is dead set on, they don't, if I come on this show and I think y'all don't appreciate me, just the slightest thing would make that come back into my mind, because they are not done with this. This is not over with, because I don't believe Draymond and I don't believe KD. KD is going to forget it, and I don't believe that Draymond. We see all the things outwardly. There's other things going on that team. Now, the only thing prevents that is them playing great basketball. You get into a series like Houston where they were down after five games like that, Chris Paul being healthy. I know they have home court advantage. These things can come back in an instant. In a heated moment, they can come back just like that. Is this guy still with us? And I believe it will come up if
they're challenged. If they're pushed, that then all of a sudden it could be, does somebody let go of the rope?
He just got thrown out of game up by
20.
We don't know how he's going to act.
All right, so that's a totally fair point.
I mean, we used to not know how Draymond was going to act.
And now Kevin Durant's the most volatile one. And so I was looking at it as it's never going to get worse than that moment. and I don't think it will, if your point is that moment still exists, that moment is still a burning ember, it just hasn't erupted into a real fire, I can buy that. I can totally buy that. Now, to your other question, it's not a report that he hasn't been embraced like Steph Curry. It's a fact. Of course he hasn't. They brought up Steph Curry from a pup, from a 170-pound kid from Davidson, from a guy who we knew could shoot but had these ankles and we didn't, to turn into the greatest shooter of all time, the first unanimous MVP ever, and to bring the first championship for that organization in multiple generations. You are never going to be as... Miami really liked LeBron. Not like they loved Dwayne Wade. Like, D-Wade's their guy. Will always be their guy. LeBron had to go back to Cleveland to get that type of love. And the Lakers, whether they win championships with LeBron or not, will never love LeBron the way they love Kobe. So for KD, that's the other reason the Knicks are attractive, is what else does he have to accomplish in Golden State? He's done everything he can do in Golden State. The Knicks would be different.
Yeah, I don't think either the personality can be replaced inside those franchises, even if you think the player's a better player. I know Dwayne Wade and all the stuff he went through in Miami. Like, he was an icon on and off the court. Yeah. So when LeBron came there, LeBron came with some conflict. So trying to replace someone, man, Steph is an unbelievable guy. And Steph has improved his basketball game. We can argue, is KD a better player than him? But what Steph has done on and off the court, those are the things that make him irreplaceable. When those guys were arguing, what was Steph doing? Man, he was the common influence. That's why these guys can't be replaced. Man, there was some conflict between Spoelstra and LeBron and his camp. Man, Dwayne Wade was in the middle of that. That's right. Why these guys can't be replaced. It's not the basketball, because when LeBron, the second half he was in Miami, he was so much better of a basketball player than Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade talked about, my knee's giving out, I might not be able to continue.
Right.
And part of that was part of LeBron leaving, but their personalities, being D-Wade and Steph, is the reason why LeBron or KD, icons in this game, they couldn't replace them as the face of those franchises.
All right, we got a break there. Coming up, do the New England Patriots have to start planning for life after Tom Brady? Still ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, now joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook.
What's up, sir? Good to see you.
Good
How
to
are
see
you?
You as well. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much.
You weren't here last night.
I was in your spot last night, man.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn. I was off there, man, watching the game.
How did you like the game?
Oh, it's nice.
They got it beat up a little bit, huh?
Well, I mean, them. I mean, I'm kind of with Kawhi and them. So, you know, I was watching, even though the Nets provided me with tickets.
Chris got his hat in a lot of different rings right now. The Nets gave me tickets. I like these people, but Kawhi's my guy.
I mean, Kawhi's tickets just weren't going to be as close.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Brian, let's talk Le'Veon Bell, who, after a tumultuous ending to his time in Pittsburgh, signed a four-year, $52.5 million deal with the Jets, looking for a fresh start on a new team. He will pair up with second-year quarterback Sam Darnold. Darnold said he spent time watching Bell on tape, came away saying simply, I love it. What's not to love? Brian, what does having an elite running back do for a young quarterback like Sam Darnold?
You know, I was thinking back to, you know, of course, I played with Donovan most of my career, but there was a point where Kevin Cobb was our quarterback, and he was a young quarterback, first or second year, and it's a different world. Defenses approach you differently. They're saying, hey, if they're going to win, he's going to have to throw the football. That means 8 men in the box. That means we're going to run blitz to try to make them enforce this football team to throw the football.
Sitting over here laughing because it took me right back to, man, the defense, they talk a lot of trash when you got a young quarterback,
right.
Don't they?
It's a different world. The whole different world. They're much more excited. They're much more willing to say, listen, we're going to go for broke. We're coming after this guy. We're going to get after him. And that's what happens with young quarterbacks. I think it's a totally different world for Le'Veon Bell. He's not playing with Antonio Brown. He's not playing with the Hall of Fame quarterback and Ben Roethlisberger. It's a different thing. And I think Sam Darnold is going to be one of these guys that says, listen, I love the security blanket aspect, but things will help him. This running game will help him. Now you have a star that can say he garners respect across the league, and Sam Darnold certainly would reap the benefits from that.
What I thought was really interesting, and I know you can relate to this because of the type of running back you were, was when Sam said when he was watching the film, a lot of the quotes were not about what Le'Veon did in the run game, but what he did in the short passing game.
Yeah.
What he did in the, it's broken down, I got to dump it off to somebody, and he can go get me yards after catch. Darnold was dead last in the NFL last year in completion percentage on short passes, 10 yards or less from the line of scrimmage. And that is an enormous percentage of your passing game are those passes around the line of scrimmage. When you, as a running back that was great as a receiver as well, you've got to know, right, that you are there for your quarterback when things break down, that that is as big of a part of your responsibility as when the ball's handed off to you.
Well, that's what you get from a veteran running back like Le'Veon Bell. Understanding it's a blitz, get your head around a little bit faster. It's an opportunity for me to get one-on-one with the linebacker in space. Those are the great things you get from Le'Veon Bell. The hard part, again, is that when we had Kevin Cobb, a second-year quarterback at the time, they were blitzing. And so I was in blocking. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to get out on the route.
They were forcing you to stay in.
They were forcing me to stay in because I was in blocking because they're blitzing. And at that point, it's a little bit different. I think Le'Veon, of course, you're going to have to scheme some scat protections where he's getting out free, not having to block. That's going to be a great thing, certainly a security blanket. We talk about it all the time. Your success on first and second down is going to dictate can you win a football game. It's going to dictate whether you can be successful on third down. So Le'Veon Bell can bring running 3-4 yards on first down, catching the ball out of the backfield, 3-4 yards on second down. Now you're third and manageable. That's going to help Sam Darnold in this success throwing the football down the field.
But isn't the fact that he can catch those short passes good for even when things don't break down, just as a confidence booster for a guy like Sam Darnold, who's again getting into his second year, wants to get out there, wants to do something more with this team, give him some yardage, get the first downs. Isn't that another way a dual threat guy like Lev Bell could help him?
Absolutely. A lot of those broken plays where the quarterback is just familiar with where you might be. Now, if I got Westbrook over to my left, even though I think I might have protection to my right, I just know, and I start to hear his voice. His voice becomes prominent in his ear. So instead of those short passes you talked about being incompletions, even if I just get a completion and he doesn't make anyone miss, but we know L. Bell, he's one of the great open field runners that we have in the game. And one of the reasons why he's such a help to Sam Darnold is one of the things that you, man, he is not a small guy.
Right.
If you want to blitz him, oh, he's an asset to the passing game compared to typically a receiver as good as him is going to be undersized, and I can put a big linebacker and send him through the A or B gap, and he can run that guy over, and that's how we can take him out of the passing game. So I believe in a number of ways that Sam will be added by having this great player, and I believe that it's important, and you can see from the beginning. Sam Darnold, how did he learn about L. Bell? Not L. Bell talking to him. He went and watched the film,
which I thought is great this part of the offseason to find a way. I need to watch these Steeler games. I need to watch these Steeler games from, by the way, keep in mind, L. Bell didn't play last year. So how much Steeler football was Sam Darnold watching when he was living in Southern California playing for the Trojans? Not much. He had to go back and watch it.
Right. And then another small part of him coming there was Adam Gase in the interview process telling him, I've been watching all of your plays in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
So for me, the reason why I also believe he's going to be successful is the quarterback and the coach, they're not getting ready to try to make him into something that he's not. They're getting ready to run a version of the Pittsburgh Steelers that L. Bell is comfortable with, and I believe that that leads to Sam being successful.
Le'Veon is 27. I had my best years. Most running backs have their best years, 26, 27, 28. Having a year off, your body will feel much better. I think he comes back strong, ready to play. He's going to help this offense a whole lot. Sam Darnold certainly will reap those benefits.
Offense is like a tool bag. When we get on the field, man, the more weapons we got, that means more tools we have to be able to operate. You got a back, three down back, dual threat, make people miss. It's an asset to that young quarterback being, oh, okay, this week I can go to this. Sam Darnold in two games, he started 13 games, but in two games this year, he had a 100-yard rusher, had passing rating 110 in those two games. So a 100-yard rusher, which L. Bell can do, huge asset.
All right, Brian, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, a new candidate to be the head coach for LeBron and the Lakers has emerged. Winky, hear who it is next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here on First Things First. Catch it all Monday through Friday only on FS1.
Who gets us started, Jenna?
I get you started, Stacey. Welcome back to First Things First. We're now joined by Chris Broussard.
What up, my man?
What's up, Chris?
How are you doing? What's up, brother?
Always
good to have you. A lot happens under our breath. All right, time for your Subway Choice moment. While the Lakers have yet 35-year-old
Chris Broussard
to fire head coach Luke Walton, it has not stopped the rumor mill from spinning out his possible replacement. The latest name to emerge as the front runner, Juwan Howard. Howard has been an assistant with the Miami Heat since 2013. Also played with LeBron for three seasons in Miami, where he won two titles. All right, Broussard, would Howard be a good fit with LeBron and the Lakers?
I was told about a week ago by somebody connected to the Lakers that there's a guy out there, a candidate that nobody's really talking about. Is it Juwan Howard? I'm not sure. He's a good coaching candidate. You know, obviously he's played with superstars.
What makes you say that? Yes.
I think, one, he's played with superstars like LeBron. Mm-hmm. He also himself as a player was at one point kind of a star and then became a role player, so he understands that level. He's been on a good coaching staff with Spoelstra where they won championships, and now they've kind of, you know, been mediocre. And he comes from a culture in Miami that, you know, they know the importance of culture building.
Don't you think that David Fizdale's success helps Juwan Howard's prospects?
He hasn't really had success yet.
David Fizdale's success in Memphis, and I think, obviously, the Knicks are terrible, but I think he is regarded as a good coach.
Right.
And he came from
He was on that
staff. Yeah. Like, when you have the Spoelstra coaching tree, all of a sudden, it's like people are more have question marks about coaches that come from Belichick's tree because they haven't been very successful.
Right.
If you have, all of a sudden, one branch of your tree, it's like, hey, that's a good coach. I think that that helps him. I think that Heat culture is special.
No question.
And you mentioned they haven't had much success since LeBron left, but they've overachieved. I feel they've overachieved. It was two years ago, 11-30, and then finished the year 30-11.
Yeah.
Their turnaround. I think
I wouldn't say overachieved, but I mean, because they haven't, those young players haven't developed into really good players. I mean, and I think Spoelstra's a good coach. The culture's tremendous. Now, all that said, with Howard, I don't think he's the coach for the Lakers, personally. I don't think LeBron's got 2, maybe 3 years left where you can win this championship. I don't think they need to be experimenting. I think, you know, like Derek Fisher, we all thought, I could have said the same exact things I said about Juwan Howard, about Fisher. We all thought he'd be a really good coach, and he may be down the line. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it obviously didn't work out in New York, and you were with a mentor of yours in Phil Jackson. So, Ty Lue is the guy. He knows LeBron. He's won a championship. He knows what LeBron needs around him and what LeBron's like. I just don't think this is the time to bring in a first-year coach.
When you're looking at a candidate for the Lakers, does the question have to be, is this the best coach to challenge LeBron, or is this the guy that LeBron knows best and he feels most comfortable with? Does Juwan Howard fit into one of those two?
Well, I think that he fits in one of those buckets as far as LeBron being familiar. And if there was coaching styles, if you went to head coaches and or systems that they're running, would the Miami Heat be one of the systems that LeBron, because he's familiar with it, respect? And have been like, yes, I like how they prepare the players. I like how they go about their business every day. I like how they travel. I like how they treat the players. So if I can't get Pop, if I can't get Rick Carlisle, if I can't get Spoelstra, like if I can't get those guys, I'm going to take someone from their tree that they can give me things that I believe that LeBron will buy into. So I believe that him being familiar, not only him playing, but LeBron has tremendous connective tissue with people he's been with, especially the older players. Like, man, they rant and rave about the relationship that they have. They go back and forth. So I know that veteran players have always been special to LeBron. I'm like you, though. What's the difference in Juwan Howard and Luke Walton from a couple years ago? Because, man, I believe that coaches are born, but also you have to develop them into getting them to being the best version of themselves.
It's rarely Nick Nurse. It's rarely a guy who first year, first time head coach and hits the ground running. Now, he also took over a team that was the number one seed in its conference last year, got better and added Kawhi Leonard, and so he was in a perfect situation.
He's got low maintenance guys, too.
And they're out of the spotlight. Right. They don't have drama surrounding them because they're in Toronto. The other reason Juwan Howard, I think, his name's going to be connected, not just because he played three seasons with LeBron, won two titles, and then coached LeBron for a year because LeBron's last year Miami, he was on the staff, but people, I don't think people knew this. I didn't know this. Rob Pelinka was on the Fab Five. Rob right, Pelinka, yeah, so they played in college together. He obviously was not one of the Fab Five, but he was on that
team. He was around the periphery.
Exactly. So he has a relationship with Juwan. But I not to just be an echo chamber here. I totally agree with you on Ty Lue. It's you cannot go for the high upside pick. You have to go with the safe pick. And you know Ty Lue can do it. You know what system he'll run. You know the relationship with LeBron. You know that you're not going to hire Ty Lue and a year into it be like, oh, my God, do we have to fire him?
Right.
And the clock is ticking fast. You said 3 years. That's what's left on his contract. And that is the most optimistic LeBron James supporter would say 3 years left as a top five guy. Realistically, it's probably two. We're year 19. He's going to be an MVP candidate is what we're talking about. So it's probably two. So you can't put yourself in where there's any chance that going into year three, wait, are we replacing the coach again?
Right. Now, and if I thought that one of these young up-and-coming coaches is going to have some insight on getting one of these free agents.
Sure.
With Juwan, he's from Chicago. Anthony Davis, he's from Chicago. They might have some relationship, but he's not a free agent.
Right.
You know, so if I had something like that, I'd be willing. But as you guys mentioned, as far as LeBron and the Lakers, yes, you have to keep in mind about LeBron and how long he's going to be able to play. It's got to be a part of it. That part right there is more important than is LeBron familiar with the system. They need a coach who's ready to go right now. So if they get a free agent or if they're able to make the AD trade, that they have enough things in place that they can be a title contender next season.
Right away. There's a lot of coaches that look like that were hot assistants. And I'm not saying Juwan wouldn't be good, but I mentioned Derek Fisher. Remember Mark Iveroni coming out of Phoenix years ago? He was like going to be the next great coach. Heck, Luke. I mean, to this point, Luke hasn't done it. So, you, like I said, you can't be experimenting. Now, I've heard Ty Lue wants big money. Because as much as he likes LeBron and they get along,
it's stressful,
it's a hard job.
And Magic, too, right? Yes. So he wants big-time money. So I don't know if that's a factor, but maybe why you're hearing about Juwan now.
Wow.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.